In today's Nutrition and Life episode, I speak with pelvic health physiotherapist Dr. Katrina Fabian. Katrina and I spoke about how to exercise without fear of leakage, how to be intimate without pelvic floor pain, and other reasons why we should prioritize pelvic floor health. I'm excited for you to listen to my conversation with Katrina. And please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe and give us a rating or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much. Now on to my conversation with Katrina. Hello and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with pelvic health physiotherapist, Dr. Katrina Fabian. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
I'm very, very excited to talk to you about all things pelvic health because I think it's a topic we, as in like the general population, don't know that much about, and there's so much misunderstood, and it affects all of us, really. But before we dive into the details, Katrina, please tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to what you do and where you are today.
Okay, so yes, I'm a doctor of physical therapy, and I specialize in pelvic health. So I help people with all things bowel, bladder, and sexual function, in addition to abdominal rehab. So that could be, for example, after giving birth or during pregnancy, or even after surgeries like for hernia repair or cesarean section. All those things are in my wheelhouse, and that's what I'm doing day to day, really. I'm in the clinic helping people with this, and that's a lot of coaching, it's a lot of behavior change, it's a lot of exercise and movement.
Amazing. And what got you so interested in this area? Because I mean, it's not necessarily something where at 8 years you're like, Mom, I want to be a pelvic health physiotherapist.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I was interested in physical therapy in general for a long time, even since I was in my teens. But I was introduced to pelvic health specifically when I attended a talk myself at a big national physical therapy conference. And the speaker was so holistic. She placed importance on treating the person as a person and meeting them where they're at and creating a safe space for that person. And I really never saw that modeled through my experiences with physical therapy. And that really got me interested. And then in the years that followed, you know, I would hear things like women in workout classes not being able to do jumping jacks or jump rope because they were leaking. And then when I found out that physical therapists could help for those things, I was like immediately in.
Oh, very, very cool. So you had already decided you wanted to become a physiotherapist, but you didn't really know what specialty area or if you wanted to specialize in anything. Okay, I understand. That's super cool. And so then the transition from there into pelvic health, is that quite difficult, like to specialize in a particular area, or and what really helped you learn so that you are now the practitioner that you are?
Yeah. It's not difficult, but I think every pelvic health physical therapist knows there's a lot of studying and outside work outside the clinic to become confident in this specialty. I personally was so lucky to be able to have a clinical internship in women's health at the end of my doctoral studies. And that that set me on the right foot. I have a great mentor, love her. And then from there, even after graduation, I was fortunate to have mentorship, like actual, you know, formal mentorship within my first job, in addition to being able to take a ton of courses in pelvic health to, again, get confident with like the variety of diagnoses that we see. So yeah, it's been a lot of studying.
I can imagine, but if it's something that you're passionate about, I mean, that's so wonderful. And I am a huge believer in mentorship in any area of life, whether that's professionally or with training or, you know, having people to look up to and to learn from, whether they're like, whether they know that they're your mentors or not. Like sometimes someone, even just if we study their books or so, that can be somewhat of a mentor. But yeah, really, really cool. And I love your mission. On your page, it also says that you help people to live without fear of exercise, to help Help them live leak-free and to manage pain, to be intimate without pain, and to go to the toilet when we want to. And I think that's such a cool mission. Like literally all these things. I mean, I can't think of a single person who wouldn't want all of this. And so I can really appreciate all the things that you do. But yeah, to start off with, why don't you tell us a little bit why pelvic floor muscle health really is so essential for overall health and well-being?
Of course, thank you. And so every muscle in the body needs to function well, right? Like we need our biceps to function well if we're going to grab a bag or a box or train. And it's the same thing with the pelvic floor muscles. And the thing is that a lot of people aren't aware of these muscles because one, we can't see them like unlike the biceps or the quads. But they play such a big role in bowel, bladder, and sexual function and our core health too. So, because the pelvic floor muscles are literally at the bottom of the pelvis, they are holding our organs above. So, that's the bladder, that's the vaginal canal, the rectum, and everything above. So, we need those muscles to, contract well when needed and also relax when needed to be able to empty or to be able to insert something. And then they also are often a forgotten piece of the core. So that we know it's not just the rectus abdominis, the six-pack abs, and the obliques. It's we've got a ceiling, walls, and the floor is the pelvic floor. So very important.
And can you, I mean, you kind of like already mentioned where they're at, but in terms of in anatomy, I guess, where is the insertion points and like the origin? Because as you said, it's so difficult to even just like visualize like where they are, how we contract them, and so on.
Right. So I usually, when I demonstrate this, I literally place my hand at the bottom of like the perineal area. So that's the area covering the opening. So vaginal opening, anal opening. And so those muscles insert into the pubic bone or the hard bone in the front of the pelvis or hips, all the way towards the back to the tailbone or coccyx. And then over to the sides to the ischial tuberosities, which is where like our hamstrings connect, our glutes are around there. And so it's like a diamond-shaped group of muscles right down there.
Right, that makes paints a good visual picture, and I to me it also paints a picture of like how large they really are and what sort of area they really cover. So obviously they have to hold a lot in with the organs and so on, as you mentioned. And now, so in terms of practical application, I guess, first of all, what would be some best practices for pelvic floor health and abdominal health, I guess, for anybody? And then later we can talk more about like how you treat it in your practice as well.
Okay, sure. One thing that I am teaching people is not to strain all the time. And that includes when we toilet or empty. So that means peeing and pooping. We often ha think that in order to get something out, we need to push out and use our core and strain, hold our breath, Valsalva maneuver. But we really don't want to do that because that will place undue stress on the pelvic floor muscles, and that can weaken them over time. So that's really one best practice is to just let the pelvic floor muscles relax and instead use our breath. So nice, easy, slow breathing as we inhale and even as we exhale if we're on the toilet. And really the same goes for things like exercise and training. So not straining over more than we need to. Valsalva maneuver is a different story, but besides that, we should really just let the muscles do what they need to do. Unless they're not functioning well, then okay, then we need to mentally think, contract now or relax now.
That's a really, really great point. Well, number one, I don't think that enough people give themselves enough time when they're like on the toilet. You know, that's like, okay, I have 1 minute. I should probably go for a number two and then like try to literally squeeze something out when you are under such a rush. And I don't think it things don't work optimally like that. And number two, I like that you mentioned how important it also is to be able to relax the pelvic floor muscles, because I will be transparent. So when I did CrossFit maybe nearly 10 years ago or 9 years ago, I literally remember a competition, and there was something involved called double unders. So it's basically like a skipping rope, but you jump twice for each skip, I guess. And since it was in the middle of a competition and I'm very competitive, I just kept going. But at the end of the set, there was a puddle below me, and I was super embarrassed. I mean, I didn't care in the moment, but at the same time, there were like other women that kind of like literally swept the floor after me, like once I left and to change. And I thought, like, my core is so strong. Like, I can see my abs, and which not necessarily is an indication for a strong core, but still. And B, like, I do planks all the time. Like, how can this be? My pelvic floor muscles must be strong enough. But yeah, it turns out later on that I actually learned that they were just overstimulated all the time.
Right. And we see that a lot. And right, that is so cool. You're so athletic and capable of a lot. And we do make these assumptions about our body and how it's functioning. And, it's like by no fault of our own. We just don't know. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So if someone else is listening to this and is thinking, I'm also quite fit. I go to the gym and everything else, but how specifically can I then learn or slash train my body to also disengage the pelvic floor muscles? Because it's not, like, sometimes it's like you have to relax, you have to relax. If you try to force yourself to relax, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, great point. Because we can be told to just relax. But what does that even mean? So a very actionable thing that we can do to test this is take a deep breath in through the nose and observe how that is moving your body. So if I'm watching someone and they can inhale through the nose nice and silently and slowly, and we get a good expansion of the rib cage to the sides, the belly is expanding, the chest is rising, and even the back is expanding, then we can also, here's an assumption, but we can also assume that the pelvic floor muscles are getting enough downward movement as well. And that's what happens when the pelvic floor muscles relax. They're moving downwards, they're lengthening. And so that's really foundational, is to be able to take a breath in like that. And then as we exhale, everything, including the pelvic floor muscles, are just coming back in towards their resting state.
Yeah, that's a really great visual and a really great point. Like, even that 360 sort of expansion, as opposed to just the flat chest or even just the belly going out. So that means simply practicing deep belly breathing, taking more frequent deeper breaths. And I think one thing, in addition to like planks and frequent planks, that I always heard about, engage your pelvic floor muscles, and was also like the practice of let's say if we're doing like a glute bridge or something like that, people have the various comparisons, like, okay, you can engage your pelvic floor muscles by pretending it's an elevator that's going up, or you're sucking up something from the ground, or like, what kind of comparisons do you usually have or hear when it comes to engaging them now on the other end of the spectrum?
Right. And I love those cues. And, I'll find that certain cues work for different people. So it's trial and error. But I do like the elevator cue because we have levels of a contraction, right? We have a max contraction of muscle groups, but we can also have a subtle contraction. And if someone can develop the awareness of going from like the ground floor to the first floor to then the second floor, all the way up to the fourth floor, and then coming all the way back down to ground zero. Amazing. That's awesome. Awesome proprioception there. Other cues that can help. This one's my favorite. You're gonna picture having a straw in the vaginal canal. It's going to be different for men, but similar, a straw in the vaginal canal. And outside of the pelvic floor is a smoothie, a thick smoothie. And I want my client, to think of sucking in through that straw. So because,
That I like that one. Yes.
it's silly, so it gets the person to laugh in the moment, which is good.
Yeah, but I do think at the same time, it kind of like if we picture like a straw going out the belly button or something like that, then it kind of like paints that visual quite nicely. So yeah, thank you for that.
Right, because the pelvic floor muscles, they really do squeeze together and lift up towards the head when they contract. So that's why that's a very helpful visual.
Awesome. Well, so I mean, you're giving us some cues of how you're working with your clients there in your practice. No, oftentimes when we hear physiotherapy, people think, of like massage. If we have a strain or a sprained muscle or a strained muscle or something like that, you get some manual therapy. Obviously, with the pelvic floor muscles, that's a little bit difficult or weird. So what exactly does your practice look like other than giving great cues like this?
Yeah, right. So besides exercise and movement, there is a lot of behavior change if needed. So coaching people through developing good bladder and bowel habits. But also there is a full assessment of the body. So, even though I'm specialized in pelvic health, I really need to be able to assess someone's lumbar spine and their hips too. That comes from assessing how they move, giving them cues to change if needed, and also hands-on assessment to assess if there are muscles with increased tone. Are they contracting all the time? So there is that. So movement change as well. And there is, like you mentioned, there is also an internal component to a pelvic health physical therapy. And so that can include, if someone needs it, then we will do a pelvic floor muscle assessment, of course, with a gloved, lubricated finger, to again palpate muscles, but this time internally. So through the vaginal canal, or again, if absolutely needed, then intrarectally.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I mean, if there's like a ruptured muscle or like a really big blockage somewhere, you do need to palpate that. I get that. And what would be some good bathroom habits that you try to teach your patients?
Okay, so normal habits for peeing would be being able to hold for 2 to 4 hours, and more like 3 to 4 hours. And sometimes this is news to people. They're going every hour or just like whenever, just in case. But for good bladder filling and then coordination between the bladder and the pelvic floor muscles, we want our clients to be able to hold for 3 to 4 hours regularly, and to go without difficulty, to go without pain or discomfort. For bowel regularity, this is anywhere between every 3 days all the way up to 3 times a day, which is a big range, but it just depends on that person's regularity over time. So if someone has always pooped, every 2 days, even since early in their childhood, then okay, that's their normal. We wouldn't deem that as constipation. And it's the same thing for emptying. It should be easy. Using a squatty potty is awesome. It actually does reorient a certain pelvic floor muscle to relax the anal canal a little more. Using that 360-degree breathing that we discussed earlier and just letting the muscles do their job.
Love it. No, some really great actionable tips. And you mentioned also other gym or strength training habits, so or things to pay attention to. What would be some pointers there? Like how frequently do you get try to get your clients to engage in lifting or exercise, and what type?
Yeah, so with this, it's so dependent on the person. But if someone is having leaking with just one movement, for example, because oftentimes it's like, oh, it's just my squat or it's just my deadlift, then I want that person to identify at what point are they leaking. Is it upon the ascent? Is it when they're eccentrically lowering? And then at that point, that's when it really is helpful to come in for an assessment or work with a pelvic health physical therapist. But you can do some self-assessment yourself by trying to engage the pelvic floor muscles at that point in the lift and see if that helps. Or even, just setting up with a nice big 360 degree inhale and brace, but this time engage your pelvic floor in addition to the entire brace. I mean, sometimes that's enough. So, in this case, it would just be, hey, I want you to practice what we worked on in the clinic during that specific lift. For other people, if they are presenting with like true weakness of the pelvic floor muscles, I might want them doing specific Kegels like every single day and then taper that off. So it's such range.
I love that you just point out how individual it is and that you need to assess where the person is at. Of course, that makes sense. I do love that just generally you're advocating for strength training and the importance of that, and not just planks, but also acknowledging how great of a core muscle builder like things like the squat and the deadlift are, and how important that is in there. So yeah, absolutely. I think that those are some really great pointers. Where I often also hear the word leakage pop up is with running. So maybe there are some points, or maybe you can give an insight as to why that's an issue with running quite often.
Yeah, right. Especially for long distance runners or even sprinters too. It's because those sports require such amazing endurance. And, if, leakage will happen at the weakest point, right? It's like, what's the weakest link in our kinetic chain? If it's the pelvic floor, well, then we're probably going to see some signs of pelvic floor dysfunction there first. So, yeah, usually for runners, it'll be fecal or urinary incontinence. And I mean, that runner, I would really want to know, yeah, what's the function like of their pelvic floor muscles? What's the power and the strength? Because we know that increased strength in any muscle group also increases endurance. But I also would want to know, like, how strong are their hip rotators, their core muscles as well, and the rest of their hip complex, because all those muscles really support the pelvic floor, and so it could be true weakness, and a lack of endurance of the pelvic floor, or it could just be that they're compensating for weaker muscles, or that the whole system is not biomechanically optimal for the sport.
Right. Well, and I think it's not too uncommon for runners or endurance athletes of any kind, really, to be very strong in just the one plane, like just going forward. And sometimes those lateral movements with the hip rotators, they really are lacking. So that's a really great point, because some people might think, I'm so fit, I also lift, but then they only do things that go forward in their lifting as well. So yeah, those rotators, I think that's a really great point.
Yeah, exactly. Like a simple tip here is really look at your workout program. Like, are you training in all three planes? Do you have, yeah, the front to back movements, the side to side, and then rotation movements too?
Yes.
Great point there.
And in the sense of, well, not just running, but just overall leakage as well. I think especially women postpartum tend to have a hard time with that, or maybe also feel ashamed of some of the leakage that they're experiencing during that time. Maybe you can talk about that, number one, how you deal with taking that shame away of your patients, and number two, how you recommend that they build up that pelvic strength again in a healthy way.
Yeah, thanks. Because it's hard out there for mamas. There's so much pressure on them, and they're navigating a completely different world and social scene, and family dynamic. So there's all of that pressure on them. And then on top of that, if they're seeing someone like me, they're also thinking like, oh my gosh, my body's failing me, or this didn't happen during my last pregnancy. What's wrong with me? It's sad, but in those moments, it's, of course, I hear them out. And then I just tell them, like, factually, what's happening. And Usually, just the information is enough to empower them to know that there is a cause of this. And guess what? It can be changed and improved. Like, that's so awesome. And so, yeah, that's where the empowerment comes in. You know, after the let's get emotional about this. Let's then talk about what we can do. And yeah, usually after that, then they usually will have wins. You know, week after week, they'll see changes in, you know, their body, their baby, and what they need to do to do their job as a mama. And so, help supporting a mom in being strong, like during and after her pregnancy, is like one of the greatest joys in my job. It's awesome.
Oh, I love hearing that. And I think sometimes the issue is also that, especially soon postpartum in the early weeks, many women are afraid of engaging their abs too much because they're afraid of diastasis recti, or I never know how to pronounce this, but yeah, you know what I mean. And so maybe, I don't know if you have any specific tips to like, in terms of what exercises or so as well in order to prevent that.
Yeah, so as far as exercises go, let's look at three different things. Because just to be, you know, straight up, there's not going to be one perfect exercise or exercises that I can throw out for every person. But if they look at the movement of their belly is the one thing, that will clue them in into what their core is doing and how well their core is supporting them. So if they notice doming or like the bulging out or the coning, then they'll know, hey, this exercise is too much for me right now. So let's regress it, let's modify it, and you can still make gains just in a different way. The second thing, I know I brought this up earlier, but you'll be able to see like how foundational this is, but the breathing, how are you breathing? Can you breathe during that exercise, or are you having to engage so strongly because your core muscles can't support you in that movement? So if you can take some breaths in and out, that's awesome. The third thing to look at, this is a little bit more obvious or not, but it is if there's any pelvic floor dysfunction going on. So if you're doing an exercise and you do notice some leaking, whether that's from the front end or the back end, then you'll know, hey, my pelvic floor muscles could be supporting me a little bit better right now. And that means my whole core is working well and a reduced, you know, that means that I can have a reduced risk of diastasis rectus abdominis during my pregnancy and after.
Amazing. Really, really great tips. I love how it's just so actionable and also, yeah, quite simple, frankly. Sometimes we would try to or want to overcomplicate things when they're actually so simple. And yeah, so one going from leakage now a little bit more into still into like being intimate and so on. One thing that I saw on your page, and I just absolutely love it, it was that you had a list of various books that you recommend reading. And of course, there were amazing things on there like Atomic Habits or Outlive by Peter Attia. But also, one of my favorites when it comes to some an anatomical functions, and that was Come As You Are by Emily Nagolsky, I believe is her name, and she actually even had a documentary on Netflix about this book, I believe, for a while anyway. I don't think it's up there anymore, but it was basically, I think it had the same title, Come As You Are. And for the listeners that are not familiar with this book, it's essentially a kind of a, not necessarily a guide, but an encouragement for every woman to get more explorative and curious about her body and about how to achieve orgasm or just generally like pleasure and have fun when being intimate, and kind of shedding some limiting beliefs that we have around that, or some shameful beliefs that we have around that, or just in general our body. It's a wonderful book. I can highly recommend it. And yeah, I would love to hear from you why that's on your top 10 list. And then also maybe some tips when it comes to yeah, intimate health and pelvic floor health connected there.
Sounds good. So, yeah, I love that book so much. Big fan. And there's also a workbook. The number of times where I have mentioned this title to a client and they order it, and that's when they make huge progress regarding sexual health and addressing pain during sex is countless. So, I mean, just recently, I know a client of mine, she was having pain with sex, and she never really discussed it that thoroughly with her husband. But she received the book. Her husband was there. She opened up the package, and that sparked the conversation for them. Like, amazing. And so it just does wonders for breaking down walls so intimately placed. But as far as the pelvic floor muscles go with sex, like I said earlier, all muscle groups need to be able to contract with ease and relax with ease. During an orgasm, typically what happens is our pelvic floor muscles are contracting, and then there's a big release. I want to make sure that that is not painful. I want to make sure that a muscle can contract without pain because sex and orgasms should be amazing, not painful. I also want to make sure that someone's muscles can relax fully because when they don't, that's when we can get some pushback and it could literally feel like a wall is hitting the pelvic floor or something in the vagina, with sex, with penetration, or with a pelvic exam, even. And no one should ever have to deal with that.
Yeah, really great point there. I completely love the book for some of the same reasons that you mentioned, that it's just like it makes people curious and allows sort of for conversation around that. I think for me, some of the biggest takeaways were number one, that so many women don't even want to talk about or think there's something wrong with them. It's like, oh, my vagina doesn't look quote unquote normal, and this is not quote unquote normal. And like in the book, she just goes into the detail of like, what the heck's normal anyway? Like, okay, yes, we look at this anatomical thing, which hypothetically, like in an anatomy book or whatever, this is what the most beautiful vagina is supposed to look like. But it's totally normal if this part here is bigger, if this part here is smaller. It's also totally normal if you're 50 years old and you have never, ever, ever, ever had an orgasm. That's normal. Like I just think it's so beautiful how it's just liberating and like kind of giving permission to like you're not there's nothing wrong with you unless I don't know, there's something really, really, really weird going on, but there is very likely absolutely nothing wrong with you. And to the point of the not having had an orgasm before or so as well, one of the takeaways I had from the book also was that in many, many cases, it's just because we're not relaxed enough. So it's like if kind of going back to the point of like, I need to relax, I need to relax, or I need to sleep, I need to sleep. If you're like, I need to come, I need to have an orgasm, I need to have an orgasm, when is it finally coming? You're probably not gonna have an orgasm if that's what's going on in your mind during that time. So yeah, just really like also setting the mood, setting the stage in that for everybody, it's different. Like some person gets aroused more easily than the other. And if this and that doesn't turn you on or doesn't get you to relax, there is nothing wrong with you. So yeah, really, really great book.
It is. Yes, exactly. I love everything you said just now. Because so many women are experiencing these same things and have these same questions. But yes, I'm not a sex therapist. I think that'd be such a fun job, but I'm not. And so this book is such a helpful tool for, letting my patient explore that before, or maybe in addition to seeking the help of a sex therapist also.
Yeah, really, really great. I just love how you also provide the platform to your patients to even just talk about that. I think often we're afraid to talk even to our physicians. But if we don't talk to our physicians about these kind of things, like who are we going to talk to about this? So maybe probably not our girlfriends if it's something we're ashamed of either. So yes, really, really good point. I would love to hear about some of the other books that are on your list. I already said the Outlive or Anatomic Habits. Any other books that you recommend, just lifestyle or pelvic health related?
Yeah, there is. I think it's the last one on that list, but It's Gut, 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 by Gilia Enders. And I love her voice in that book. It's a very easy listen or read, and it's kind of funny. And so, I understand a lot of people don't want to read just nonfiction, fact, 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 fact. And this book makes it so fun and entertaining to learn about our GI system. And so she goes into some norms and dysfunctions there, and even like little tips, conservative tips that people can try. Diet related, supplement related, habit related, and that can be very eye-opening for people as well.
Super cool. And I mean, obviously, the gut is so closely linked with our pelvic floor muscles. I'm to the point of the leakage earlier on when I was saying that I was experiencing that several years ago. I often noticed that it would occur more frequently when I had more food in my stomach or like in my digestive tract. Somehow, something must have pushed against the bladder there more or made it harder for my pelvic floor muscles to be engaged. I don't know. So clearly, those tips would be very helpful from that book.
Yes, exactly. And that's a great point because the more mass is in the belly, the more support the pelvic floor has to be able to do in that moment.
Awesome. Well, great additional book recommendation. And yeah, Katrina, most people listening to this are very much in love with strength training and wanting to push themselves when it comes to resistance training and lifting heavier. How can we also make sure we're protecting our pelvic floor throughout that time? So in order to not get injured, yeah, also to perform well over the long run.
Right, over the long run, I want someone to have a balanced program. So that goes into having enough rests throughout the week. If someone's having soreness, that could be a sign that they do need to take a rest break or do some different form of activity the next day. Because if there's sign of fatigue in other muscles, well, hey, your pelvic floor muscles may also be fatigued. Paying attention, I always say, like, respect your body, but challenge it. Yeah. And that's if you have signs of stress, physically, mentally, socially, whatever, respect that, give yourself the rest. But also, you need to have that progressive overload to see changes. So, I want to make sure my patient or client is doing the strength training, yes, in addition to the cardio, in addition to the relaxation work as well. And also increasing the load over time, or if they've got like 6 week blocks that they are incorporating different kinds of movements from block to block, and within those blocks, increasing the load gradually. So I try, to keep it simple for my patients and for my clients. And so those are a couple things to be mindful of, in addition to, like, if you are having signs of pelvic floor distress, like, maybe reel it back a little bit and see someone. So.
Awesome. No, I love all your tips. You have honestly given us a really great insight into something that is not talked about enough. So truly, thank you so much, Katrina. I will make sure to link all your social handles in the show notes so people can go and look you up, and specifically if they're in the area and in the area of Las Vegas, that they might even be able to see you in person. But truly, thank you so much for your time. It's been a true pleasure speaking with you.
It's been so fun speaking with you too. So thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Katrina. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening, and don't forget, life is too short to be in a body you don't feel good in.